chance to see the Gemaras which actually talk about Shulchan Sahir, because for the most part they're not actually in our Gemara here in Sanhedrin, even though they are the undercurrent. So to bring some of the topics together, if you recall, so we talked about the appointing of Dayanim, the functions of Dayanim, and why there would be such an appointment, and differences between Jews and non-Jews, between Chutz La'aretz and Eretz Yisrael, between when there was smicha and when there isn't smicha any longer. So one point to note is that the Ramban that you saw, the Ramban al HaTorah, Ramban Parashat Shoftim, the Ramban there says that nowadays we don't have a mitzvah of minui shoftim. Right, that mitzvah is not in effect. It's not in Eretz Yisrael or in Chutz La'aretz. Well, why not? Why? What changed? No smicha. So we don't have smicha. And he adds in that context that, yes, we still do have batei din, but that's only because of shlichus hayom. Right? So bringing up this idea that we have some kind of inferior system making it possible to get through the day here, bezman hazeh, in Chutz La'aretz, or bezman hazeh really anywhere. And because it is so inferior, so therefore there is no mitzvah of shofar. So that brings up the question, which we alluded to when we first mentioned the topic. So is shichusayu a mechanism in HaTorah or a mechanism in Midrabban? So you may have also had a chance to become a little more exposed to the fact that this seems to be a debate in the Rishonim. And later on, was commented on by the Nesivis. The Nesivis worked off the assumption that Shichusayu was a principle in HaTorah, mostly because of Geirus. Right? The question was that we know the Gemara says in Yevamos that when it comes to Geirus, because we find the language of Mishpat, so Mishpat apparently requires smuchim, requires ordained rabbis, and therefore, the question has to be asked, so if we have no smuchim nowadays, but we have gerim nowadays, so how does that add up? And if you read about the conversion crisis in Eretz Yisrael today, it's not about this topic. There's a lot else to argue about, but no one's saying, wait a minute, this whole thing doesn't work because we don't have smuchim. So how do we have converts nowadays? How do we have a system of converting people if we don't have smuchim? If it says mishpat, we need dayanim, so shouldn't we need smuchim? So this is an issue that the Rishonim already dealt with, and the Nesivis works off the assumption that, okay, since we do accept gerim, must be because of shlichusayu, and it must be therefore that shlichusayu is a mechanism daraisa, because otherwise how could we have gerim? Right? So Tosfos talks about this, Tosfos in Yevamos and Tosfos in Kiddushin. Tosfos has two answers to the question of how it is that we're able to mekabel gerim bezman hazeh. One of them is the phrase shlichusayu, right? And again, shlichusayu appears in the Gemara elsewhere. It appears in the Gemara Bava Kamma. If you got a chance to see that, that was the first and maybe the longest of this morning's Gemara Makamos. But there, we know that the Gemara tells us shlichusayu is evoked in that context. The Gemara says for monetary issues with basically two conditions. Right? What are the two conditions where we find shichusayu invoked in a monetary context? Has to be something relatively common, right? Something that is shchiach, and something that is strictly limited to straight monetary issues, such as paying back a loan or collecting damages of the like, but not what we call knasos, not the additional above and beyond penalties that the Torah sometimes talks about. So the fact that the Gemara focuses on something which is common, so we talked a little bit about this yesterday also, because it came up in Prusbul. So what can you determine from that fact? What's the relevance? Why should we care whether it's common or not? Are you?
How, if it's there, how it would have been set up to begin with, like we found by Prusbul, is according, at least according to Rashi, you need land because that's how normally works.
Right, that was the reference yesterday, right? That basically we do find that in order for things to trigger a response to Rabbanan, they have to be relatively common. Now that's true both Lekula and Lechumra. That you would have thought maybe it's only true, let's say, in terms of Isurim, that Chazal got involved and made prohibitions as a safeguard when there is a relatively common threat, but not if it's totally uncommon and unique to one person. precedent. But it seems to be true in a broader sense also that even the institutions that they made to enhance society were made when the situation that they're addressing is relatively common. So we saw that possibility we've shown yesterday. And it could be that's also what's at play here when the Gemara says that's one of the conditions for Shlichu Sayu. Now you could say that it means something a little bit different. You could say that Shlichu Sayu, whether it's Daraisa or Rabbanan, the first point sounds a little bit like it's Rabbanan, that Chazal get involved when something is common enough, so that perhaps supports the idea that it's Rabbanan. But you could say that whether it's Daraisa or Rabbanan, the point is that it's kind of an inferior mechanism. Right, which is what the Ramban was already alluding to in his commentary on Chumash. And therefore, the point is, we're using it to the edge. But really, we only should be dealing with everything in perfect Torah law, but we can't do that because we don't have smukhin, and the alternative is to let society run hefker. We can't do that either. So, the situations that are real problems, we bring in Shlichu Sayu. Right, so you can say, all right, we know that we need Geirus. Now, Tosfos, I forgot to mention the second answer, Tosfos says on the one hand Shlichu Sayu. On the other hand, Tosfos says that we have a tradition that the Gemara, I think I mentioned this earlier, maybe last week, that the Gemara says regarding another question, that we know the Torah requires a korban for geirus. But nonetheless, we accept geirus nowadays even without the possibility of bringing korbanos. So the Gemara says it has to be possible. It has to be possible because the Pasuk says L'doro Seichem, it has to be possible to accept geirus at every point in history. And therefore, if you don't have korbanos today, it must be that you can have geirim without korbanos. So that's a possible answer to Tosfos quotes here as well. So what does that mean? Either that means you don't need smukim, which some of the Rishonim understand, or maybe it means that, which is also presented as another answer in Tosfos, that Shlichu Sayu could do the job. So we could say either Shlichu Sayu is rabbanan, and it's only invoked in cases of common situations, or basically the point is that Shlichu Sayu is an inferior workaround and we will invoke it when we have societal problems that have to be dealt with. So we can't let people steal from each other or borrow money, never pay it back, or whatever it is. So we need to have a system of what they did. And we need to be able to accept Gerim. So therefore, it's going to be necessary to have Shlichu Sayu for that. Is there a question before? Somewhere in the chat room? Right?
I mean, I wanted to know what would be the main problem with accepting Gerim.
Well, the Gemara talks about the problem of korbanos. That if one of the basically a male Gerim needs three things. It needs, or maybe four things, depending on how you count. It needs Kabbalah Slombitzis, that is part of the current controversy. Besides that, there's Mila, Tefillah, and Korban. So the problem is nobody brings korbanos nowadays. So you could come to the conclusion, all right, we have no base of Mikdash, we can't bring korbanos, we can't accept Geir. But we know that's not true because we have a tradition of L'doro Seichem that we will always be able to accept Geir. So therefore it must be that we can accept without the korban. That issue the Gemara gives. Tosfos is saying, what about that if you need Mishpat, if you need the Beis Din, you should apparently need Beis Din Smukim. So you could say, well, maybe then we don't really need Smukim, we need something else. Or maybe Shlichu Sayu will somehow suffice here if we find it playing a role elsewhere. Right? What else do we see about Shlichu Sayu from the Gemara? The Gemara in Gittin, right? That Shlichu Sayu plays a role as far as Kfiyah is concerned, as far as compelling behavior. That was also relevant to something we spoke about last week, right? Why do we need a Beis Din of three? So maybe it's because Beis Dins are sometimes going to be required to compel compliance. And that requires smicha too. So Gemara Gittin tells us that Shlichu Sayu can serve for that. And again, that might be familiar from last year for those who were with us then, because we talked about Kfiyah Gittin. That was the context of that Gemara, that requires at least Shlichu Sayu to be in effect because it requires ordained Dayanim otherwise. So some of the Rishonim say explicitly, like the Rashba, that Shlichu Sayu is Rabbanan. And the Ramban seems to say like that also in Yevamos. But then the Ramban also considers the possibility that it is Min HaTorah. So then you can maybe ask a question. Right? Is there possibly a stira within the Ramban? What stira might have just come to light? Possibly? What Ramban on Chumash had said, what? Right, no shofar nowadays. Why? Because we only have Shlichus Sayyid. And the Ramban, Yavamos, considers the possibility that Shlichus Sayyid is Doraisa. So what question could you ask? If Shlichus Sayyid is Doraisa, so then why do we have to say there's no more mitzvah of being a shofar? Right, it sounds like from Ramban and Chumash, like we don't really have capability of having shofar. We only have Shlichus Sayyid. So no mitzvah anymore. But if Shlichus Sayyid is Doraisa, then what's the problem? So this is discussed in the Sefer Chavetzelos HaSharon al Torah. It's a contemporary Sefer on Chumash, Lumbus on Chumash. So in Parsha Shoftim, the first piece in Parsha Shoftim, so he discusses this question. And he says, similar to a point that we made last week, that even if Shlichus Sayyid worked Doraisa, what would that mean? That would mean that min ha-Torah, we have this mechanism for carrying out din in the world. But they still would not be called dayanim. That the mitzvah of mino shoftim, which seems to emerge from an ideal Torah vision of a perfect society with judges in place, that requires ordained dayanim. And in the absence of that, we have to keep the world running. So that happens through shlichus sayyid, which could even be a din min ha-Torah, but even so, it still would not be actual dayanim. And he goes on to point out that the Gemara on that base in the base, if you saw that, so the Gemara seems to assume that when the Torah uses the word Elohim, right, I say it like that because this is a whole usage of the word Elohim, it's not a reference to God, it's a reference to dayanim. But Dayanim, who are somewhat godlike in the sense that they are ordained Mipi Moshe Rabbeinu, there's Mumchen. So we see from that Gemara, from our Gemara that phase in the days, that to be a real Dayan with the status of Elohim, you have to be a Mumcha. So it could be that even if it's Min HaTorah, there's a way to deal with things, still that's not going to have a status of Elohim, the status of a full-blown Dayan. And he notes also that the Tumim, that the Tumim says along these lines that the prohibition of the Torah not to curse a dayan, Elohim lo sekalo, doesn't really apply as much as that, because nowadays we don't have dayanim shmuchim that have that status of Elohim as the pasuk is referring to. So it could be that we'll have to make a distinction that there is the ability to carry out justice in the world, and there is the status of dying in the full sense of the word, and those are two separate things. Which parallels what we discussed last week about the difference between din by Bnei Noach and din by Jews, maybe even din in the Chutzlaretz and din in Eretz Yisrael, that there is a function of keeping the world running, and then at the same time, there is more than that, there's a mitzvah of shofar to shofar, which is more specific and more absolute, and maybe requires more intense structure than calling every ear, and requires the yonim smoothing. Okay, so far so good. The Kiryas Sefer of the Mabit, in his Sefer on the Rambam, the Kiryas Sefer in Hilchos Sanhedrin writes that a statement that was controversial, that many others questioned, that nowadays you can have been in Chutzlaretz even on a level of Min HaTorah, because if there's no smuchim anywhere in the world, so then there is no longer any limitation. And he then adds V'hakol holeich achar hafachim, which is an interesting kind of statement. It basically means that, well, how would you interpret that statement, V'hakol holeich achar hafachim? What's he adding there by saying that? I'm going to think about that for a second. What's he adding by saying a kol hole is after a thought? I think what he's basically alluding to is that when you have objective dayanim in the full sense of the word, so then you have a clear source of authority, and you turn to that authority objectively. When you don't have such a clear base of authority, like this is ultra the case today, right? So then you have more of a need to then turn to the wisest answer you can find, which is obviously much more subjective. It's interesting, the first Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, I assume we're all familiar with the first Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, where the Mishnah says, Moshe kibel Torah miSinai, and then gives the whole transmission of the Torah, and then goes on to say that there are three messages of the Anshei Knesset HaGedola, right, having Mesunim B'Div, V'Hamidu Tamidim Harbe, V'Asius Yagu Torah. Right, you should be careful, deliberate judgment, you should have many Talmidim, and you should make a fence around the Torah. So Rav Nassim Gishtetner, I think that's our first mention of him this year. So L'Horus Nassim, in his commentary to Pirkei Avos, Rav Nassim Gishtetner was a great posek in Bnei Brak, who usually mentioned frequently, I guess, the first time this year. So in his commentary to Pirkei Avos, have you ever mentioned that sefer specifically? All right, so in his commentary to Pirkei Avos, he writes that what's the whole progression of that mission? So Moshe first received the Torah and then passed it down, etc., etc., and then we have these three statements. So when Moshe Rabbeinu was the leader of Klal Yisrael, so then there was an objective address to where the Shiloh go. That we know who is the posek for Klal Yisrael, it's not a question. And that has a lot of advantages to it. Among them also, you can have a certain degree of confidence in Siyata Dishmaya. Anachronistically, there is a story of a much later Moshe, the Chassam Sofer, 250 years ago, Rav Schechter happens to say this point sometimes, and this is also discussed in that the commentary of L'Horus Nassim, that the Chassam Sofer, his son, the Ksav Sofer, would object to him. He said, you know, you're writing letters to Talmud Chacham all over the world. Maybe you should think about them a little bit more. You should take a longer time in going through them before you write them. You seem to write them kind of instinctively and let the proofs come afterwards. So the Chassam Sofer reportedly responded that the fact that all the Shilohs end up coming to him. So that seems to indicate that he should have Siyata Dishmaya, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not going to let Klal Yisrael go on their own track in terms of Tzad. And since people are all asking him the Shilohs, so he's confident that he has a certain amount of Siyata Dishmaya, he's going to get the right answer as long as he's reasonably diligent about it. So the point being that it might be more of a stretch to say that about the Chassam Sofer, but in Moshe Rabbeinu's door, you can understand that there's a Siyata Dishmaya because there's one clear address to where all the Shilohs are going. So fine, so that's helpful. And then he passed it on to Yeshua, etc., etc., until you get to later generations. So in later generations, you don't have a clear address. So then, what do? So then you have to rely more on Chachma. You have to hope that you're asking the wisest people, because you can't be as confident that you have the Siyata Dishmaya that comes with knowing you are dealing with the source of Psach for Klal Yisrael. So if that's the case, so then the three pieces of advice, the three directives that you find in that Mishnah, are all related to that. That having Mesunim begin, be very careful when thinking about issues of Din, because you might make a mistake, you don't have the same Siyata Dishmaya. Hamidu Talmidim Harbe, spread the net very wide, make sure to have as many Talmidim Chachamim out there as possible, because we have to really, again, do whatever we can to make sure there is a broad base of Chachma. And as Siyus Yagla Torah, we have to be more careful with safeguards, because, again, we don't have any guarantee like we may have once upon a time had. So it seems like it's in that vein that the Kiryas Sefer is saying that we don't have the same type of avenue as far as one clear address, and therefore we have to do what we can in order to make sure we get the wisest answer, but that's effective on a level minatot. So it sounds like what he's saying is that when there are dayanim smuchim, so then that represents the chain, that represents the Masorah from Moshe again. So then the shilas all have to go there. And the only way they can be dealt anywhere else is with explicit permission from those dayanim mumchim. But if you don't have that, so then you'll have to follow the chachma to get the best answers you can. But then that's also effective on a level of minhag Torah. And the Meiri in Bava Kamma, that Gemara of Smucha, of the Gemara of Shechusayu. So the Meiri says a similar thing, according to the Mixas HaGaon, if I remember correctly. And he emphasizes the fact that you can't have a world that's going to be destroyed because everyone's killing each other. So it's not 100% clear what he means by that. Does he mean, again, that basically you have to have a system of justice because otherwise you don't have a world? So if you have Shmuchim who can carry it out, great. But if you don't, then that's got to have to be the system. Rav Asher Weiss talks about this in his Sefer on Chumash, in Parshas Devarim, actually. So he considers for a moment that maybe what this is an example of what we call Masar HaKasuv L'Chachamim, that there are certain mitzvos which seem to be min HaTorah, but the details are not spelled out in the Torah. The Gemara and Tosfos most explicitly invoke this concept in the context of Malacha HaKol HaMoed, that there seems to be a prohibition in HaTorah to do a Malacha HaKol HaMoed. But the details, if you read the Gemara and the Mar Katan, they all seem to be like the Rabbanan kind of details. So it could be, as the Gemara and Tosfos over there suggest, that this is an example of a principle that's in HaTorah, but the details were given over to the Chachamim to figure out how it would be carried out. So maybe that's also true when it comes to din, that the Torah as mitzvah has to be din. And the details are given to the Chachamim to create the system that will make that happen. So when you don't have mumchim, so then maybe you could have shichusayhu operating, whether you want to call that a deraisa, or you want to call that a derabana, or you want to call that somewhere in between, perhaps a masar hakasav l'chachamim. But he doesn't conclude that way. And it says, ultimately, he thinks that the pshat is, like we said last week, that this is about mekilas rishos, this is about proper coverage of the central authority, and that's basically how Varan explains it in the Gemara over there in Sefer Gittin. I didn't put it on the list because New Seder was going to be short and there was only so many sources to get through. And it sounds like from Rashi over there in Gittin also, that's what's going on, that basically there was a asking of Rishus from the Chachamim when they existed, from the Dayan Smukim when they existed, and that's probably the nature of this mechanism of Shlichus Ayin. Again, the Pasha translation, the idea that it's Shlichus, that is difficult to apply, especially in the modern context, because now we don't have any Smukim alive today, so to say that they created a Shlichus from their original time, and that shlichus continues to be binding when the mishalchim are no longer alive, it's very difficult to work with within the laws of shlichus. But nonetheless, I forgot if I mentioned last week or not, that the Kazenberger Rebbe, in the Shtubas Divrei Yatziv, writes that the prohibition of lo sasur, of deviating from that which Chazal say, is applicable also in the context of shlichusayu, because the whole mechanism of shlichusayu is an extension of what the original Besdin has set up. So, any questions about any of that? Any issues? That makes sense, more or less? Okay, so we'll just quickly review what we spoke about. We want to have next on the agenda for tomorrow. Of course, tomorrow we have our pizza lunch. That's very important. Everyone should be here at 12 o'clock to meet each other and to experience everything that can be. What I'd like to talk about is to say a little bit more about the Besdin HaGadol tomorrow, just to put that in context, and then go to this first, the beginning of the Mishnah itself, talk about Dinei Mamonos, Mishloach Shekzeilos, etc., very fundamental concepts, which will then take us basically one by one through some of the fascinating issues that come up in our Mishnah. So just a quick review we spoke about today. So we raised this issue of Shechusayu, which we see from Gemara's elsewhere, not in Sanhedrin, and we know that it applies to allow a monetary structure, at least for the purposes of Mamon rather than Kenas, and at least for common scenarios. And from the Gemara and Gittin, that it works for the purposes of Kfiyah. So we raised the question whether it's Deraisa or Derabanan. The Nesivis assuming it's Deraisa, some of the Rishonim assuming it's Derabanan. Talked about how that interacts with the law of Geirus, where we see Mishpat Ksivdei, And the Ramban, considering the possibility of Minhag Torah. So the question was asked, if it is Minhag Torah, how does that work with the Ramban's comments on Chumash, that we no longer have a mitzvah of Shoftim nowadays because we only have Shechus Ayyub? If Shechus Ayyub works Minhag Torah, so then let's keep up the mitzvah of Minhag Shoftim. So apparently, like the Chavetz HaTzal Sharon discusses, even if it's Minhag Torah, it doesn't mean it creates a status of dying, a status of Elohim. So for example, for the purposes of the Yisra, Elohim lo sekalo, but rather it means that you can bring about din, and it relates to what we said last week about having a basic context in which to keep the world safe, which is not the same as the full-blown status of dayan. We discussed that the Kiryas Sefer says that nowadays you can have din d'oraisa in chutz laretz because there are no dayanim anywhere in the world, and hakol holach achar achochma. So we talked about what that might mean, about the difference between having an objective address for the Masorah and not having one, and how Rav Nosson Gishtetner used a similar concept to explain the first mission in Pirkei Avos, the story of Ibn Sofer, and all of that, and how the Meiri makes a similar comment and says that essentially we have to have something to keep the world from falling apart. And you mentioned Rav Asher Weiss' discussion, does that mean it's Darais in the sense of Masor HaKasos for Chachamim? Maybe yes, maybe no, and that more common idea that you find is like the Ran says in Gittin, that it's basically about Kavod and about the Tilos Rishos, and that when you have the Dayanim Smuchim operating, so one has to refer to them. But if not, then there is another mechanism that allows the din to be carried out, and that is probably not the literal translation of the Shlichus as a messenger of an emissary, because that's hard to work within a system. We don't have living Dayanim actually conducting such a system and appointing the Shlichus. All right, so I apologize for the schedule flipping. And I wish everyone a wonderful, productive rest of the day. And we'll see you again tomorrow.